Hello, I wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening, and also to explain why you might hear ads like this before, during, or even after an episode. We're a small but mighty team here at Realm, and to help fund our shows, we promote products or services that we think you'd enjoy from a variety of sponsors. If any of our ads interest you, one of the best ways to support us is by visiting the link or using the promo code in the ad. It's pretty much a win-win since you can get some great deals and we can keep making awesome shows like this one. You can also visit realm.fm/partners for more information about our sponsors and how to access the different promotions. Thanks again for joining us in our corner of the universe. Listen away.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hey there, this is Adrenaline Realm's Thriller Channel. I'm your host, Neil Heligers. So glad you're back, and this is False Idols, Episode 13. Enjoy.
Layla and James were on a plane to meet Bennett in New York. Bennett had left before them. Over the few days following Layla's discovery of Pierce's drug habit, the two agents had established unspoken rules of engagement. Each evening, Layla sent a briefing on the day's progress via encrypted email. But the channels that had been more personal between them, like the growing bond between a mentor and a mentee, had sealed shut. Neither of them spoke about or acknowledged what had happened, and Layla imagined that Pierce felt as wary about her as Layla felt about Pierce. She still couldn't fathom how Pierce could have built such a successful career in the Bureau while maintaining a drug habit. How much longer could she keep it up? The memory of her frantic pleas for Pierce's help when she'd been trapped in Bennett's office made her whole body tighten with rage. It seemed to Layla that it wasn't a matter of if Pierce would mess up, but when and how badly. She didn't intend to get killed because of Pierce's recklessness. In any case, the two of them had cobbled together the blueprint for their sting focused on Bennett Rothkopf. They were going to introduce Bennett to a buyer and see if he might be persuaded to offer up illicit artifacts that could prove his involvement in the network of crooked dealers. The buyer would be an old school friend of Layla's, whom, of course, she had never actually met. At some point, Layla fell asleep and dreamed that she walked into the Rothkopf gallery and found Pierce standing quite still inside the foyer. Pierce blinked and presented a syringe in her upheld palm. Layla startled awake with her head on James's shoulder.
"I'm sorry," she said, rubbing her eyes.
"It's okay."
He smiled, kissing the top of her head. They took a cab from JFK. The Rothkopf place was a West Village townhouse. The interior was like something out of a period novel, with the occasional startling piece of modern art thrown in. Old pieces appeared adjacent to new ones, and mixed in among the art and antiquities was a mesmerizing collection of bric-a-brac that told the family history. The walls were painted in bright, eclectic colors. Books lined almost every surface and were piled high in heaps in every corner. The place was beautiful, eccentric, full of character and personal history. Bennett had gone to see a lady friend the night before and had not yet returned home. Layla watched James cook omelets in the bright kitchen, giggling as he lip-synced expertly to radio pop, including an extraordinary rendition of Katy Perry's Roar, complete with choreography. He was casually expert and precise at the stove, and she felt comfortable in his home. But as she watched James cook, she also felt a rising anxiety. Layla's sense of what family meant was deeply colored by her own painful story. but standing in the kitchen with James, surrounded by his family photos, she realized it was possible for family to feel like a blessing. This stark fact struck her most as she spotted and picked up a photo of James as a boy, standing between Bennett and a beautiful woman. She froze when she realized its significance.
"Your mother," she said.
He looked toward her, saw the framed photo in her hand, and nodded.
"She's beautiful."
"She was," he said.
"What was she like?"
He glanced at her.
"She was funny, sweet, smart, kind, all the stuff a kid wants in a mom."
He forced a smile, but he also changed the subject.
"This is actually her family's old house. They were New York blue bloods, the family going back to the old Dutch settlers of Manhattan."
"Blue bloods?"
"That's right. One of her great-grandfathers started a little bank on Wall Street."
"A little bank," said Layla, laughing.
"That's right."
"It did well, I'm guessing?"
"It did. Anyway, the family was rich for a good long time."
"Was rich?"
"Well, those people back then didn't work. We have to work."
She nodded and thought about that.
"The stuff you told me about your dad's gambling, was that an issue between him and your mom?"
"I think so, but I'm not completely sure. They used to get into some god-awful fights. They traveled together, everywhere. The Far East, Latin America. They spent some time in Ghana and then later on in Jordan and Oman. They ended up falling in love with Cairo. They started the gallery there. Or the cooperative, before they started the gallery."
"Where were you born?"
"Here in New York. By the time I came along, Cairo was already a big part of their lives. What I can piece together is that my mom was drawn to my dad's sense of adventure. She used to say that he had more energy than any man she'd ever met. And I think for her, that sense of risk couldn't be separated from the risky things he did. Heading out to digs in the deserts of Tunisia or along the Gulf of Aqaba was no different than losing $10,000 in one night in Macau."
"It was just who he was."
"That's right. Or at least that's the story I've told myself to explain everything. I'm not gonna get much out of my dad when it comes to those days."
"He doesn't want to talk about it? At all?"
"Not to me."
He slid an omelet onto a plate.
"Let's eat."
They ate on the veranda. Layla was almost starting to feel like they were on a real vacation when her phone buzzed. "Meet you at Bleecker and Wooster. Place called Tercet's. 3 o'clock tomorrow?" It was followed immediately by a photo of Zach, accompanied by the text, "Me." She studied the photo closely, then deleted it. She paused and peered across the table to spy James's eyes straying across the headlines of the New York Times. She used the moment to take a quick selfie. The shutter release sound caught James's attention.
"Selfies for the Cairo crew."
He smiled.
"Just a little something for Jehan," said Layla, as she sent the photo of herself to Zach.
Layla scrolled through her phone contacts and found Bennett's New York cell number as James rose and started to clear away the plates.
"Hey," she said to James. "My friend Zach wants to meet your dad. He's interested in looking at some objects."
"Amazing,"
he said. She was happy that he seemed distracted. Her hope was to isolate Bennett, to keep the sting focused on him. She composed a new text. "Bennett, Layla here, great news. My friend Zach wants to talk to you about buying some pieces." She wondered if that would do it. If Bennett would fall easily into the trap they were setting for him. "He deserves it," she thought. But it was starting to really pain her to consider how much this whole thing would hurt James. For a brief moment, she tried to cast the impact on James as a kind of collateral damage, a necessary negative outnumbered by overwhelmingly significant positives. If all went as planned, by the end of the investigation, they would prosecute the major players, choke off the Muharib's funding, and prevent future attacks. If they did that, then the pain James would suffer at his father's arrest would be a small price to pay for saving lives. James kissed her on the head as he collected their plates and headed back to the kitchen. Her phone buzzed with a text from Bennett. "That's awesome, Layla. Happy to chat with Zach anytime." She rose and joined James in the kitchen. He grinned as she hugged him and she rested her head on his chest. She suspected that the best place to hide from him was in his arms. The next day, she met Bennett outside the coffee shop where Zach had asked to meet.
"You weren't waiting long, were you?"
she asked Bennett.
"Not at all. Let's get going."
Her pulse quickened as they entered the cafe. As soon as she entered, a young man at a booth waved to her and stood.
"Layla,"
he said, looking genuinely thrilled to see her.
"Zach."
They hugged. Zach looked her up and down.
"It's so good to see you. How long has it been?"
"I was just wondering that. About 3 years, I think."
"Jesus."
Zach was a young white man of average height. He had sandy, blonde hair and a small patch of beard in the center of his chin. He extended a hand to Bennett.
"You must be Bennett. Layla's told me a lot about you."
"Nice to meet you, Zach," said Bennett.
They shook hands and Zach invited them to sit with him. The coffee shop was bright and not too full. Layla watched Zach's face for any cues or signals, but he navigated the improv with ease. This was all going to be improv, she realized. After a polite amount of small talk, he leaned forward intently.
"Layla tells me you might be able to help me. What I'm looking for, what I'd like to find, is something really special. I know there's this whole scarab craze going down right now, but that's not what I'm talking about. I want something..."
He waved his hands in the air in an effort to convey the indefinable.
"Unique."
Bennett smiled.
"I might be able to help you out. We have a local and specialized team. We could get you some items that are quite rare."
Layla glimpsed the salesman in him, his innate charm and intelligence setting clients at ease. He leaned back and nodded. Zach grinned again.
"That's great."
He turned to Layla.
"It looks like I've come to the right place."
Layla smiled, although her thoughts were a riot of emotion. On the one hand, she felt like the simple little sting they'd set up was working perfectly. On the other hand, Bennett, at least at this early stage, seemed to have fallen into the trap so easily that it was heartbreaking.
"I'm glad I could bring you two together," she said, with a weak smile.
"Zach, why don't you come by the gallery and I can show you some things? Let's aim for tomorrow."
Zach said he would see them then and took off. As soon as he was out the door, Bennett set his hand on Layla's shoulder and smiled warmly at her.
"Wow, Layla. You really are great for business."
He sighed and grew thoughtful.
"It also doesn't hurt that my son is head over heels for you."
"Thank you, Bennett."
She tried to smile back at him, but it felt false. She was going to destroy Bennett's business and break his son's heart. Later that night, James and Layla walked hand in hand down a dark West Village street. She'd briefly considered asking him about the job offer he'd gotten in Australia. He still hadn't mentioned anything, but she didn't want to spoil the moment. Her mind turned to the months before she'd left for Cairo. She recalled the endless days and drudgery of desk work, the long commutes, the dreary apartment, and drearier roommates. New York, a city she loved, had seemed colorless then, stripped of life. But ever since she'd met Pierce and gone to Cairo, and most especially since she'd met James, her life had become vibrant. Walking with James now, Her life in New York as FBI agent Layla El-Deeb seemed like a long-ago dream. On Thompson Street, or maybe Sullivan, she spied the arched entrance to a garden apartment. A bench nestled under an ivy-covered arbor, all thinly lit by a gas-fueled flame. Emboldened by the wine they consumed at dinner, Layla quietly opened the gate.
"Where are you going?"
whispered James. She put her forefinger to her lips to signal silence. "You're coming with me," she answered, giggling and pulling him by the front of his shirt. They tipsily lowered themselves to the bench, never once breaking contact. She took James's face in her hands and looked deeply into his eyes. Her joy at finding their secret garden melted away as his beautiful face reminded her again of what she was going to be forced to give up so very soon. She closed her eyes and sighed. She felt his lips as he gently kissed her closed eyelids, her nose, and then her lips. His hands disentangled from her hair and slid down her neck to her waist, wiping her mind of what was to come the next day.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
On a remote island in frigid Lake Superior, a fabricated creature birthed from the mind of a disturbed genius stalks the very people who created it. Ancestor, by number one New York Times bestselling author Scott Sigler, is a classic tale of science gone horribly wrong. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Layla was riddled with anxiety as she traveled alone to the gallery the next day, a rainy Thursday afternoon, to meet Bennett. Zach was due to arrive in a few hours. James had some errands to run and would meet her later. Bennett was already there, stepping out of an open storage unit. Long drawers held some of the Rothkopf Gallery's most priceless stock, including relics from ancient Egypt, Syria, Iraq, Jordan, and Yemen. Bennett put on white cotton gloves and gave Layla a pair. He took a few items out and they sat together at a desk to examine them. There was a bust wrapped in cloth in a plastic case. It was the head of a young woman the size of a fist, an ancient funerary mask. The lapis lazuli inlays had cracked, but still stuck to the stone channels in which they had been glued millennia ago. The back of the head was broken, but the face was intact and startlingly vivid.
"It's beautiful."
He nodded.
"Say hello to a princess."
He seemed nervous. His hands moved fast as he worked, and Layla couldn't detect whether or not they were shaking. She wondered if he was nervous because the object was so clearly priceless and daunting to handle, or because he was doing something wrong. He unwrapped the other items. There was a bust of a man that looked similar to the one of the woman, but this one was larger, and the tip of the nose was sheared off. He also unwrapped a broken chunk of a bas-relief frieze depicting four women seated in a row in what looked like noble finery.
These are pretty special.
He looked at the bas-relief with an expression of unfiltered and unself-conscious reverence. The way he handled them indicated to Layla an expert's ease and confidence mixed with true love of the work. He smiled timidly at Layla. She realized, all of a sudden, how important this was for Bennett.
Do you think Zack will like them?
Are you kidding? He's going to love these.
Bennett beamed and laughed out loud.
Excellent. Let me get some coffee started.
He left her, and she studied the busts and the frieze without touching them.
Coffee's gonna take a few minutes,
he called to her.
I'll pull the paperwork on these. Can you keep an ear out for the buzzer?
Yes.
She wondered if this was what it felt like, to be at the center of something, undercover, to see the crime unfold with your very own eyes. Her heart ached at the thought that she would be the one to bring Bennett Rothkopf to justice. She felt suddenly sick and clasped her hand to her mouth.
You okay?
Said Bennett. Layla startled and turned. She pulled her hand away from her mouth.
I'm fine.
Bennett shrugged.
Okay. You looked a little troubled for a second there.
He held a few file folders, which he set down on the desk, and Layla couldn't keep her eyes off them.
I'll be right back.
As soon as he went into the kitchen, she looked up at the security cameras that hung from the ceiling. Are they my allies or my enemies? She wondered. They were in the States now. Anything they captured could be introduced as evidence. But what if she were to look in the folders right now? Might Bennett see that? How often did he review the security footage, if at all? Did Mackie have access to them? But she quickly set all that aside. She was Bennett's employee, after all. Would it really be that weird for her to look in the folders? She decided to chance it. She opened the folder labeled Bust of Princess, 19th Dynasty, Achmim. There were, in fact, some shipping records and copies of receipts, but she eyed them with suspicion. The dates were all fairly recent, within the past 3 years. These relics were ancient, but their provenance on paper was very new. In the file folder on the second bust, she found provenance documents similar to those that belonged to the funerary mask. She froze at the sound of Bennett in the far room and looked up. When she was satisfied that he wasn't coming back yet, her eyes fell on the case on the desk. She prized open the clasps. It was lined with protective black foam, and nestled in a concave form was a garish mask. She peered closer. It was a painted knockoff of a famous bust of Queen Nefertiti. It smelled of cheap rubber, and it looked like the kind of thing someone might buy in a gift shop. She touched it and saw that it was made of plastic or rubber, and it had a rip or seam at its jawline. She opened it. The inside was hollow. She glanced at the bust and saw that it would fit pretty well inside. The cheap-looking Nefertiti had likely been used to hide the priceless bust of the princess from inquisitive customs agents.
Layla?
Called Bennett. She quickly shut the case.
Yes?
She called out.
Do you prefer cream or milk?
Cream, please,
she said. She waited. Her heart was racing. Finally, he returned.
Bennett,
she said, rising from her chair. He looked at her and frowned.
There's that look again.
He set the tray down and looked at her with real concern.
What's wrong, Layla?
The buzzer rang and they both turned.
That must be Zack,
said Bennett. He looked at her again.
Are you okay, Layla?
Her mind was a rush of thoughts, of competing lies she could cast out to buy them all some time.
These files here, she pointed to the stack in front of her. Have you had a chance to really look at them? I mean, just to make sure everything looks okay?
Bennett frowned again.
Yes, of course. Everything should be fine.
I only bring it up because Zack's dad is a federal judge. I think he's retired now, but I know these types of purchases can get contentious sometimes.
She stuffed her fists into her pockets.
Just thought you should know.
Bennett stood staring at her. His expression was calm and thoughtful. She felt that he had understood exactly what she meant. She stepped around the desk and toward the door.
Listen, I'll go get the door.
Okay, said Bennett.
She went to the front of the gallery and let Zack in.
Hey, Layla.
Zack smiled and hugged her.
Hey, Zack.
She took him to the back office. When they entered the space, Zack stopped in his tracks.
This is amazing.
Layla glanced at the desk. The files Bennett had brought up earlier were no longer on the desk. The artifacts were gone, as was the case that held the ugly plastic bust.
Bennett was just here, but I'm sure he'll be back any minute now.
No problem.
Zack gazed up admiringly at the mass of artwork and personal photos on the walls.
This is so cool.
He peered around at the items. Layla's eyes scanned the desk again. Had Bennett understood exactly what she had meant? She glanced at the door to the kitchen. How long should she give him? Had he cleared out in his alarm? Just when she was starting to get nervous, Bennett came in with a stack of artifact cases.
Hey, Zack, he beamed.
Bennett, said Zack.
Your gallery is amazing.
He pointed to a photo set on a file cabinet.
Is this you as a kid? Where's this picture from? Is this Brazil?
Bennett's eyes widened in surprise.
That's exactly right. That's in Natal back in the 80s, right along the coast.
Zack, Layla concluded, was a very good agent.
What are those?
Asked Layla, pointing to the stack of boxes in Bennett's hands. Bennett set them down and shrugged.
Just a few items I thought Zack might like.
Bennett presented three pieces, an alabaster jar, an alabaster canopic jar lid, and the small brown quartzite head of a man, its features rounded and worn. There was no bust of the woman, no bust of the man, nor the bas-relief frieze. Zack studied the objects. Bennett told them about the pieces, what they represented, the characteristics that made them emblematic of a specific period of ancient Egyptian art, and the traits that made the pieces unique.
Interesting, interesting, said Zack, nodding.
Layla's palms were sweating. She'd warned Bennett, and he'd covered himself. That was bad enough. But now she might complicate things even further if Zack bought or committed to buying items that she knew were legitimate, especially if she didn't tip him to what was really going on. Thankfully, as Bennett rooted in a drawer for a magnification loop Zack could use to see some of the finer details on the artifacts, Zack squinted at Layla, a signal that he was looking for guidance. She took the brief opportunity to shake her head back and forth. No. Minutes later, when Zack learned that the quartzite head of a man cost $25,000, he didn't blink. But Layla noticed that he wasn't as effusive about the artifacts as he'd been about the gallery space.
Listen, Bennett, don't you have anything more unique? Something that really pops?
Pops, said Bennett. Having observed him for many weeks now, Layla could tell he was on edge. Zack set a forefinger on the edge of the alabaster jar.
I mean, something rare, something that no one else has, you know what I mean? These don't interest you? Oh, they're beautiful, really, really nice.
Zack smiled nervously.
I don't want you to think I don't appreciate your showing me these,
he said, gesturing toward the objects.
I'm just hoping for that thing that really knocks people's socks off, you know what I mean?
Bennett glanced at Layla. She couldn't read the look in his eye. Zack was clearly fishing for something rare, and any of the objects she'd seen earlier would have fit the bill.
Sure. I know exactly what you mean, Zack.
Bennett smiled and nodded. It looked to Layla as if he was trying to play this right without being too obvious.
Listen,
he said.
Why don't you give me a few weeks? I'll look around, see if we might have something you might like. Meanwhile, is there anything more you want to know about these pieces? I'm good,
said Zack. He didn't even glance at the artifacts again.
I've got to go, though, headed up to Vermont tonight to meet up with some friends. Well, Zack, you know where to find me now.
Zack pumped Bennett's hand.
That I do, that I do. If you find that something special, give me a call, okay?
Layla found herself back in Cairo alone. Bennett had had some business in Montreal, and James needed to detour through London to consult with a client. Feeling exhausted, she took a cab home from the airport. The radio was chattering. It was news of some kind of protest, something at a local university. When she got to the apartment building, she waited for the elevator. A woman with a poodle and a woman with a cat in her arms came into the lobby. They too were talking about a student protest, but this time she caught the location. Ayn Sham University. They were talking about a riot at her brother's university. As soon as Layla got to her apartment, she sent a frantic text to Rami. What's this about a protest? Are you okay? She sat on the edge of the sofa, still, eyeing the phone as she waited. Thankfully, she didn't have to wait long. I'm okay, just a little bruised. How'd you find out? We heard the media was blocking the news. He'd been hurt. She hesitated. How would she have discovered the news? She closed her eyes. She felt so alone. James was gone, she couldn't trust Pierce, and she had just derailed an FBI operation. She didn't even know who she was anymore. Her need for connection was overwhelming. I've got strange news, Rami. I'm here. I'm in Cairo for work. She waited again for him to text back, pacing anxiously back and forth in front of the window looking over the city. Finally, he responded. Can I see you? Yes, she wrote. She held the phone tight in her fist. She felt expectant and scared all at once. She wanted nothing more than to see her little brother for the first time in 11 years.
False Idols is written by Lisa Klink, Patrick Lawyer, and Diana Wren. Performed by Lauren Ezzo. Produced by Amanda Rose Smith. FBI advisor Robert K. Whitman. Theme music by Amanda Rose Smith. You're listening to Adrenaline False Idols, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.
Adrenaline is produced by Nicole Kreuter and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Devin Shepard. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Hosted by Neil Heligers. Audio editing by Corey Barton. Original theme by Marcus Bagala. Original cover art by Kendall Thomas.
Find more shows like this on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.